From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. We're on the road in Richmond, Virginia, a great WRVA studios after a great night last night. Local event, Politics and Pints, sold out arena, a chance to talk with this fantastic lineup about things that matter most. And, of course, there's so many things happening right now. This hour, we're going to be joined by Brett Baer, I'm sure you've all heard of, and Douglas Murray, who has a brand new book out called On Democracies and Death Cults, Israel and the Future of Civilizations. His journey through Israel, where a place he's never lived, but he actually pieced together what happened on October 7th, and the rest of the world should understand what really happened. We'll talk about that, the latest news and everything else. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
With Iran, if it requires military, we're going to have military. Israel will obviously be very much involved in that. It'll be the leader of that.
No doubt about it. Nobody needs us.
We do what we want to do.
Israel front and center on the world stage as anti-Semitism crackdown on college campuses continues. And one former prime minister is heckled stateside. And Trump says Israel will lead any attack on Iran.
Number two.
Here's what they knew as early as 2020 for sure. What they knew was that Joe Biden couldn't possibly run a regular campaign, that he wasn't up to it. That's why they hid him in the basement.
They hit him in the basement, and when he got out, it usually was bad for him. Dems meltdown continues as the front runner makes nice with President Trump, and I'm talking about Governor Whitmer, and Joe Biden incapacitation is revealed, and his presidency exposed more by the day.
Number one.
This was driven by the president's strategy. He and I had a long talk on Sunday, and this was his strategy all along. You might even say that he goaded China into a bad position.
Well, that is the Treasury Secretary. Tariffs, trauma, on hold. Yep, as Trump decides, China is the problem, and everybody else can just deal with the 90-day pause. We'll talk about what it means for the markets and your money, because yesterday was your money got healthy again. We could say for a short time, although the futures are down, and now the market's finally set to open up. Members of the cabinet, by the way, informed members there'll be a cabinet meeting today, which I find interesting. Elon Musk will be there. Some people don't like that. I think it's great. But after the president made his decision, Bill Ackman, a billionaire who went into his camp and got very nervous when the tariff mania started happening, said this was brilliantly executed by Donald Trump, art of the deal. Biggest gain in a single day in 16 years. Goldman Sachs even withdrew its recession forecast following the announcement. Well, what do you think about all of this? Because now it is a trade war with President Xi and China. Joining us now is Douglas Murray. Douglas Murray joins us in New York, and he's got a brand new book out, which everybody's got to get. He's a fantastic writer, columnist, and we know, too, his book is called On Democracies and Death Cults. Welcome, Douglas. Great to see you. Almost.
Great to be back with you, Brian.
So, Douglas, first off, before we get to your book, your thought about the dramatics that have taken place with this, with all the tariffs.
Well, I think, you know, we have to accept that whether people are pro them or anti them, this is what Trump said he was going to do. And he's delivering on what he said he was going to do. I think that much of the outrage that we see in parts of the media and so on is an outrage that a president is actually doing what he said on the campaign trail and repeatedly in the debates and much more that he was intending to do. Obviously, there's a lot of short-term volatility about that in the markets, as there's going to be. But Trump is clearly looking to the long term. His long-term issue is, as he has said repeatedly, every rally of his that I reported from on the campaign trail, always it was the same thing. He talked about the threat to American jobs from China and other countries importing cheap goods to the U.S. and undercutting the American market and doing down not just the American worker, but the American taxpayer and purchaser as well. So we'll see how it rolls out, but I'm not surprised there's some upset about it.
Right, absolutely. And we see that it's really going to turn into a one-on-one with China, and we'll see who can win the staring contest. Here's President Trump yesterday, cut two.
Deal's going to be made with every one of them. and there'll be fair deals. I just want fair. They will be fair deals for everybody. I think the word would be flexible. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to show a little flexibility. And I'm able to do that.
I think you probably know better than me, but I really think Starmer of the UK wants to do a deal. He wanted a free trade deal. Every prime minister's want one since you guys had Brexit. I think that might be one of the deals that the president, the 17, the president says they're working on right now. What have you heard?
It's one of the easiest deals to do. There's great good feeling between both countries. During the, as you say, the post-2016 Brexit period, I saw up close the attempt to make the trade deal. There was great enthusiasm from the first Trump administration, as there is from this one. It was all put on hold during the Biden time because Pelosi, Biden, Schumer, and the rest of them, I don't know what Biden was thinking, but we know that Pelosi and others were just not in favor of a UK-US trade deal, and that was to the detriment of both countries. So I hope very much that this is one of the ones that is oven ready and it should be ready to go.
Douglas, one of the reasons I love your columns is you don't just talk to people, go to a think tank and then write a column. You go to the theaters of war. You go where the countries are. You went to Israel. You never lived there. But you were so moved by what you saw and so upset by the misreporting about what actually happened. You wrote this book. Tell me what you saw.
I'd visited Israel many times, as I had many other places in the region. But on October the 7th, I was in New York at my home. And the next day I went down to Times Square, where there was an anti-Israel, pro-Hamas protest in Times Square, New York, as the massacres were still going on, praising the massacres. And I thought then, I've got to get there as soon as possible, really for two reasons. Firstly, to report what had happened on the 7th. There are stories that the world just does not know, both about Israel's failure to expect it,
yes,
the breakdowns that undoubtedly happened at a military and political and intelligence level, but also, more importantly, perhaps, the stories of the victims and the heroes of the day. Many of these stories of the heroic people, civilian and military, of the day are simply not known, and I wanted to bring them out. But the second thing is, I knew from that moment that there would, in Times Square, that there would of course have to be a major war to get back the hostages, the Israeli hostages, including American hostages. And don't forget, there's one still there, Eden Alexander from New Jersey, 21, still being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza. I knew that there would be a war to get the hostages back and to destroy Hamas. And I also knew that the world's media would not be paying attention closely enough and they would misreport it and that there would be a backlash against Israel. Everything I expected was correct, but I decided to be with the army embedded in Gaza, in Lebanon, and in Israel, and to see firsthand Israel's response. And I not only report those two stages of it, but it's also a reflection on a much bigger question. The book is a reflection on why, since this was the biggest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, why do we have so many people in our society in America who've sided with the Nazis, who've sided with the death cults, who've sided with the people who did the rapes and murders and beheadings of October the 7th? Why have we produced a generation on American campuses and elsewhere? And it's not just the campuses. The other day, Union Station was shut down in New York by pro-Hamas activists, hundreds and hundreds of them cheering support for their favorite murderers. Why have we got so many of these people in our midst, and what can we do about it?
You know, it harkens back when you opened up this story, saying in New York there were protests in support against Israel and for the Palestinian cause, and you think to yourself, where did that come from? And then you find out in researching these Palestinian organizations who have infiltrated these campuses, many of which have foreign students in them leading them, like Mahmoud Khalil, there was coordination. I mean, there was probably out there where these groups knew what was taking place. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yes, and there's another thing about that that has to be remembered. These groups that have infiltrated America, and I use that word wisely, they have infiltrated America, foreign money, including Qatari money, very, very large sums of this Qatari money have come in and polluted our institutions. These people leading them do not just want the destruction of Israel, or they certainly want that first. The stated aim of the group at Columbia University, led by this guy Khalil, is, quote, the complete destruction of Western civilization. I'll say it again. The complete destruction of Western civilization. They only hate Israel first, but they hate America most.
So Douglas Murray is with us now. He's talking about his brand new book that is called On Democracies and Death Cults, Israel and the Future of Civilizations. So this is what the president said yesterday about a showdown with Iran. And I was a little bit surprised by it. Here's what he said. Cut 25.
You said the other day that if they do not agree to a potential nuclear deal, that it would be very dangerous for them. Specifically?
Well, they can't have a nuclear weapon.
Did you mean military action, though, if they don't agree?
Oh, if necessary? Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you have a deadline for these talks?
Yeah, I do. You're talking about with Iran?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Do you have something definitive this weekend, or do you see this as the start of a process?
It's a start.
Do you have a timeline?
We have a little time, but we don't have much time.
Who is it starting?
Because we're not going to let them have a nuclear weapon.
Is it going to be there, Mr. President?
And we're going to let them thrive. I want them to thrive. I want Iran to be great. The only thing they can't have is a nuclear weapon.
And they're also supporting terror throughout the region. And they also got to get rid of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Cut 26, though, is what hit me.
But with Iran... If it requires military, we're going to have military. Israel will obviously be very much involved in that. He'll be the leader of that. But nobody leads us. We do what we want to do.
But the president's saying Israel, I'm sure that's what the prime minister brought up when they were in the Oval Office. I don't think he rushed over here for a trade deal. What do you think, Douglas?
I agree. I think that the reports that this meeting between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Trump this week must have involved the trade deal discussions, but of course Iran would have been foremost at the discussions. It's very important for people to realize, I think, and almost nobody outside the region realizes this, that Iran, the Iranian Revolutionary Government, we should say, is a jihadist government that has taken control of Iran in a violent coup since 1979. It has killed, tortured, oppressed the Iranian people since 1979, but it has never been content with only doing that. It is also the biggest colonialist movement across the Middle East. It stepped in and colonized Iraq after the American-led invasion in 2003. It stepped in and colonized Syria. It stepped in and colonized Lebanon and indeed Yemen. And if you look at the whole region, Israel has been forced to fight these wars against Iran's armies of Hamas and Hezbollah.
Yep.
It has decimated both groups, destroyed them. I've seen it firsthand. The leadership of both groups is almost entirely dead. But the backers in Tehran, the Iranian revolutionary mullahs in Tehran, remain in place. And maybe Trump can be the historic president who reins them back in. But he knows that he has to be the president who ensures that the mullahs do not get the world's most dangerous weapons. Because if people like the way that the mullahs in Tehran act when they don't have a nuclear weapon, they're going to love how they act when they have one.
So right now, I'm not sure the political process, how secure Netanyahu is. He seems to be secure. But if you remember what he did in the 80s, with Iraq's nuclear program, Reagan didn't want him to take it out. George W. Bush said, I'm not going to take out the Syrian nuclear program, so Israel did. There's nobody who thinks that Israel's not going to act. The question is, will we give them the weaponry to actually penetrate with the bunker busters necessary to destroy the program? What do you hear, Douglas?
That's right. In fact, it's not just the weaponry. It's actually a particular plane that America has, which can carry the munitions required. I think that this is something which America can cooperate on. But as President Trump said, it doesn't need to lead on. It needs to lead politically, needs to lead in terms of the expression of military power, but it does not need to lead the mission in terms of the intelligence or anything else. Israeli pilots are trained, as they were in the 80s, to take out Saddam Hussein's reactor. They are trained to take out the nuclear reactors that exist in Iran that are working overtime to produce the materials for the nuclear bomb. But America can, of course, is important for being in on it, is vital for being in on it. And so I suspect that the discussion that is going on is an issue of timing, among other things, and simple pressure against the mullahs. Because President Trump has always said, and I think he's right to say, that he wants to make sure that this can be done peacefully if possible, that Iran is dissuaded from pursuing this weaponry. But if it can't be dissuaded peacefully, then the other option has to be on the table. I'm particularly glad, I have to say, that a leader has made this clear, because there have been years, indeed decades, of negotiations that have really not stopped the Iranians getting closer to the bomb. So thank goodness President Trump is saying what he is.
Douglas, congratulations on the book. I look forward to talking to you again on TV and then maybe in a longer segment on radio. Thanks so much. Go out and pick it up. It is called On Democracies and Death Cults, Israel and the Future of Civilization. Douglas, thanks so much.
Great pleasure to be with you and your listeners, Brian.
Absolutely. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, what Doge just discovered about people not born yet getting unemployment. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States.
It's a very disturbing case.
And never-before-heard interviews and first-hand perspectives.
It's described as pure evil. That's a good description.
The Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door. Listen and follow now with Amazon Music. Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So, some good news. That Russian-American ballerina, Ksenia Karolina, was released from a Russian prison. She was supposed to be gotten 12 years in a penal colony. She is now out. It's just bogus charges. She was freed in exchange for a German-Russian, Arthur Petrov, at a swap in Abu Dhabi. And Wall Street said this. And Wall Street Journal had that report. Here's what I was talking about before. Doge continues to work, whether Musk is there or not. Doge posted on their website that 24,500 people over 115 years old claimed $59 million in benefits. 28,000 people between 1 and 5 years old claimed $254 million in unemployment benefits, and 9,700 people with birth dates over 15 years in the future. 15 years in the future! Claims $69 billion in benefits. In one case, someone with a birthday, 2154, claimed $41,000. This is a Fox News digital story. Another incredible discovery by the Doge team, finding over $400 million in fraudulent unemployment payments. Let me ask you something. Does this make you happy? It should. As an American, that's what he's doing. This is why you're blowing up Teslas, you idiots. He's finding fraud, not a Republican fraud or Democratic fraud, just fraud in the system. It's more money for everybody. When we come back, Brett Baer on the breaking news on tariffs and the chances of a big, beautiful bill or the framework passing out of the House today. It was supposed to happen last night. What's going on? Don't move.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm taking a calm view, but I think it could get worse if we don't make some progress here. And of course, you know, trade wars, you saw China raise the race today, you know, and people are going to get angry and they're going to have responses. And every country's got choices. So there are short-term choices, there are long-term choices.
Do you personally expect a recession?
I am going to defer to my economists at this point, but I think probably that's a likely outcome.
That is Jamie Dimon, but he's changed his outcome and changed his thoughts, including Goldman Sachs, since the president decided to put a 90-day pause and just leave 10% tariffs on everyone and just leave the high tariffs, the exchanged high tariffs with China. I do tell you the market's now down about 700 points to open up. I'm not really sure exact reason why. There's a lot of speculation. But let's bring in Brett Baer now. Brett, it really is a breakneck pace that's going on in the Capitol Hill. What do you think is the backstory to why the president decided to end the carnage yesterday?
Morning. I think a lot of it had to do with the bond market and the sense that the 10-year was going way up, and there was some concern. You know, he says that there's because there were a lot of countries calling and wanting to make deals, and I believe that to be true. I've talked to a number of people that said those calls have been coming constantly. But I do think that there was this need for a valve of some kind to let some steam out. And, you know, I think this policy, the president's sticking to it. He wants to do this. But the approach of how they did it, I think, was coming under severe criticism. And I think he's happy with the 90-day pause, and those deals are probably going to be made. But the real question is what happens with China, to your point earlier.
Yeah, and China's action. I mean, there's a story in the Post today that the China's one of the things they're going to do is start flooding all the markets with cheap products and try to crater everybody's economy. To me, you don't have to buy Chinese stuff if you're a consumer or a country, but they plan on that. They plan on amping it up that way.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. You know, I think that if by doing these deals with other countries, the president can create a kind of coalition that has a one strategy about China, China can't last that long. It takes a lot of imports to survive. And most experts say it's only a few weeks that they can really push the limit before they have real economic troubles internally.
Yeah, here is Steve Eisman, on an economist with Ingram last night, Cut 10.
Well, I just think this is the beginning. I mean, volatility is probably here to stay, but I think President Trump's goal is to reduce trade barriers and to reshore as much as possible. I think the next step, once the negotiations with all these countries begins, I think you're going to see some tax policies like perhaps 100% write-offs of all the, if you build a factory in the United States, you get to write off 100% of it. So this is not over. I mean, today was, you know, an insane rally in the market. But I think volatility is here to stay for a while. You know, people are literally trading headlines, but this is just the beginning.
So do you have a sense of what's causing the market to open up down today?
No, I mean, it could be a number of things. It could be China, you know, increasing its tariffs. It could be uncertainty about when these deals are going to come through. I think they're going to have to roll out some of these deals to calm the markets eventually, but it may take time. You know, Bessin said it's going to take, you know, days, if not weeks, on Japan alone. But each one of these things will have its own market day. And to that point, I think that's probably going to be volatile for a while. I think that the real policy here is the tax agenda and deregulation agenda and the EPA cutting red tape. And if you want to move your factory into the U.S., you can do it quickly, efficiently, and with a tax benefit. That requires Congress on the tax side. On the EPA side, they can get it done.
Yeah. Brett, there's a plethora of books out now talking about how bad Joe Biden was in office, not so much his decisions, but how vacant his mind was, or it's not synapsing like we could see in front of our eyes, but nobody was saying it while he was in office, or very few. Chris Whipple wrote a book called Uncharted, and he said this last night, Cut 15.
Here's what they knew as early as 2020 for sure. What they knew was that Joe Biden couldn't possibly run a regular campaign, that he wasn't up to it. That's why they hid him in the basement, to use the cliche at this point. But there's an amazing scene in the book that I tell about when a veteran campaign person from the 2020 race came and interviewed for a job in the 2024 campaign in the Oval Office with Joe Biden and his aides. And the conversation took an unexpectedly candid turn when one of them said to her, you know what, in 2020, we had the excuse of COVID to keep them in the basement. What do we do now?
I mean, no kidding. We've been saying this. This must drive you mad. You're in Washington. You were seeing what we're seeing, but nobody was saying it, Brett.
It's there's a modicum of frustration covering these books. This kind of revisionist, oh, look what we've discovered. You mean to tell me that none of these people writing these books could have come forward with any of these details during this time, during the election? And the fact that we were covering it straight, you know, just straight, and got accused of cheap fake videos that were showing different moments where the president was wandering off and he can run circles around his staff, and, you know, some cable host saying, I've never seen him better. You know, I mean, it's pretty egregious. And so, yeah, there's a little frustration covering something like that.
I can't wait for your show tonight. You're tackling college sports, the NIL. You have four NCAA conferences on, Greg Sankey of the SEC, I think Tony Petitti of Big Ten,
yep.
Brad Yormark of the Big 12, Jim Phillips of the ACC, and you'll lay out what they want standards. They're asking for regulation. What are the chances of the Wild West coming into some type of law and order?
I think pretty good. There's a lot of unity. It's in our Common Ground segment. We have all of those commissioners together, really detailing the issues about NIL, the issues about the portal, the issues about the lawsuits they face and how they're handling everything. I think it's fascinating. Listen, you know, I'm a big college sports fan, and there's a lot that's wrong with the process, and these guys are trying to figure it out.
Right, and we do want, you know, the players going to get paid, we know that, but also past players want to get paid. Uh-oh. And now you have to say, what colleges can afford to do this, and do they have to cut other sports in order to compete at a high level? Because football and basketball was supplying a lot of the revenues to keep lacrosse, wrestling, gymnastics, field hockey, and others, non-revenue sports in play. So are they creating more wealth, or are they just dividing the wealth more equitably?
Yeah, the numbers are crazy, too. I mean, if you look at the numbers, especially when you get to football numbers, they're, you know, pretty insane what some of these numbers are. I think people will be surprised at some of the details. But the main thing I think these commissioners want, a number of lawmakers want, is a national standard so that it's not haphazard. And we'll get into that. Senator Ted Cruz is working on something. There's a bill in the House. They think it's congressional action that has to solve it.
And do you think so? I mean, you think Congress is going to step in there without any expertise and regulate college sports?
I think it's possible that they create at least a broad framework that enables these commissioners to do what they want to do. You know, the NCAA is trying to survive, not, you know, screw things up even further, and they'll get into it.
Lastly, the big, beautiful bill. Where is this? We expect a press conference today. We understand the Speaker and Majority Leader Thune and Johnson already had a press conference, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, I think they're a few votes away. I think there's Republican House members like Chip Roy and others who say the Senate bill is ridiculous because it doesn't cut spending anywhere near what the House wants. I think we haven't factored in where the DOGE savings, when they get to it, is going to factor in to enable them to do a little bit more. The president's optimistic. Maybe the tariff fallout is going to galvanize GOP lawmakers on this vote. We'll start seeing this morning, and then it's about four steps away from becoming an actual bill and voting.
So Joe Rogan likes your hair. Did you know that?
I heard that. That's pretty good. I mean, I have a lot of hair. I mean, Joe does not have a lot of hair. But
right. But he has a bigger upper body, according to reports.
I think so.
So we'll see.
I got to work on it.
Yeah, well, you're doing good, Brett. Hey, Brett, thanks so much. I look forward to your show tonight, as usual.
We'll see you.
Brett Baer, we're covering it all. 1-866-408-7669. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm here at the beautiful RVA Studios in Richmond, Virginia, fresh off a big event, a local event tonight, last night. Don't move.
Breaking news, the latest headlines, exciting commentary.
People are aroused. I haven't seen people so aroused in a very, very long time.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I want to tell you right now that Donald Trump outsmarted the world, but that's not really what happened here from what I understand. What happened in the bond market overnight, the spike in yields on the 30-year and the 10-year bond, which showed that people were dumping our bonds. And who were those people dumping our bonds? Japan, the biggest holder of bonds, was selling bonds. That's what I'm getting from some very big money managers. China, maybe to some extent, but it was largely Japan and others. If you have a mass sale of bonds, that means people are losing confidence in the U.S. economy, on the ability to do deals with us. This is what forced the hand of this 90-day reprieve.
And that was Charles Gasparino immediately when this all came to a close, when the tariffs went on pause. He says it's about the bonds and that the Japanese, an ally, was selling them and didn't want to buy them, which means we're not a good bet, which means the financial system just collapses. That's what made him back out, along with Jamie Dimon's comments. We also understand that he had a group, Sean Hannity had a group of senators on his show. Afterwards, he watched the show, and afterwards they got on the phone and spoke to President Trump for about an hour, including Lindsey Graham, Senator Kennedy, Senator Tim Scott. And he started out on that night saying, you know what, maybe I should loosen this up. That was Tuesday night. And then Wednesday afternoon, he decided to change gears. A lot had to do with what's happening in the markets. But he wants to reconfigure our trade relationships with the entire world. And he did it all at once. But it was an opportunity for Democrats to seize the moment. Listen to Chuck Schumer, cut six.
Donald Trump is feeling the heat from Democrats and across America about how bad these tariffs are. He is reeling. He is retreating. And that is a good thing.
Really? Okay. What about this? More from Chuck, cut seven.
This is chaos. This is government by chaos. He keeps changing things from day to day. His advisors are fighting among themselves, calling each other names. And you cannot run a country with such chaos.
Right. You could also, but you could run a country with a corpse, right? With an auto pen for 4 years. How dare you? This guy's actually leading the country. You may not agree with it. And for advisors to speak out, going back to George Shultz and Caspar Weinberger, John Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, respectful people. This goes on and on. Do you know Anthony Blinken was not talking to Jake Sullivan? Besides that, really nothing really happens like that in any administration. Oh, and by the way, it was probably on tape. It wasn't an attachment. But this is a woman named Nancy Pelosi and this senator, a lot younger, mysteriously with less hair, Chuck Schumer, said this. June 27, 1996, Nancy Pelosi, followed by Chuck Schumer, April 6, 2005. Listen to their view on China tariffs. Cut eight.
In terms of tariffs, I think it's interesting to note that the average U.S. MFN tariff on Chinese goods coming into the United States is 2%, whereas the average Chinese MFN tariff on U.S. goods going into China is 35%. Is that reciprocal?
It says to the Chinese that their unfair trade policies have got to end. Reform, because if you don't, there are going to be dramatic consequences.
That's Chuck Schumer, and that's Nancy Pelosi. That was a problem. And Democrats, in many cases, were tougher on China than Republicans. That switched with Donald Trump. Cut nine.
No, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, everybody knew you had to do it. But they never had the guts to do it. It does take guts. It even takes guts for our country to go through it. That's why I say be cool. They were saying about, see, just be cool. It's going to work out.
So those series of events took place. And now the market is down about 600 points. It's volatile, going up and down, because they're saying, uh-oh, the U.S. and China are left with steep tariffs on each other. And I don't care what side you're on. It's going to affect the market. So now people are very comfortable on both sides of the aisle, recognizing that China is the problem. Yes, if you just want to compete, that's okay. That's called the European Union. But if you want to circumvent, dominate, take advantage of, Belt and Road Program, I think is extortion, that's the issue. And that's what people are saying. Well, How does Kmart, Walmart deal with if China is going to be putting huge tariffs on their products? They're going to have to ratchet it up. Could it result in inflation? Let's see how it plays out. This also is a good opportunity, as Donald Trump said Wednesday morning. He said, get ready to buy. Cut 11, John Kennedy.
And here's what I think most fair-minded Americans saw and have concluded. With tariffs, an eye for an eye just makes both people blind. Tariffs hurt both sides. Number two, it's undeniable that many countries, including but not limited to China, have used tariffs in a way to hurt the American people, and they've been doing it for a long time, since God was a child. Number three, President Trump, guided by the principle that if you're going to be a bear, be a grizzly, hit back very, very hard. Then fresh hell broke loose.
And it did. And the market went down for three straight days, but not quite as much on Friday, not quite as much on Monday. And then things started steadying out, but the president said, listen, when the bonds start going out, that was supposed to be the backstop. I think I should just, let's call it a day, go on pause for 3 months and start doing some deals. Now, word is Kevin Hassett said, and we'll pull it for next hour. He said on Fox and Friends today, I was at a diner in Virginia, in Richmond, and I was able to speak to the governor, Governor Youngkin, and the Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears, and a lot of people. But Kevin Hassett did our show on Fox and Friends. And he basically said, we've done it, but we're working on 15 deals right now. My sense is it's not hard to figure out. One is Vietnam, one is Cambodia, one is Philippines. I think one is the UK. Italy's prime minister is coming next week, or I put him in that category too. Taiwan, India, Thailand, Indonesia, Israel, all while lining up. The ones that are lining up with China, Canada, and China. And the European Union said they were preparing retaliatory tariffs. But now that goes on hold as we start to negotiate. What the president wants, all Europe be able to buy American cars. What the president wants, be able to sell our farming goods to the EU and to make the tariffs even. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're there. Keep it here.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We're usually coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, but today from Richmond, Virginia. RGA is their great studios over here in Richmond. We're with our fantastic affiliate, and I have a chance to come into which is going to be a big place to be. It's going to be a great place to be for the next few months because it's really, along with New Jersey, the only game in town when it comes to elections. So far, when you look at the market, it looks like it's fading somewhat after yesterday's exuberance. That means Wednesday. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening with the market. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
But with Iran, if it requires military, we're going to have military. Israel will obviously be very much involved in that. He'll be the leader of that. But nobody leads us. We do what we want to do.
That is true. We will get to the bottom of this, but we know there's going to be meetings in Oman with Iran, direct or indirect, depending on who you talk to. Regardless, I will say, you can tell one thing for sure. President Trump is trying to get it all done. He's not ducking any major issue. He does let it be known that Israel will be front and center should the attack start.
Number two.
Here's what they knew as early as 2020 for sure. What they knew was that Joe Biden couldn't possibly run a regular campaign, that he wasn't up to it. That's why they hid him in the basement.
Unbelievable. That's Chris Whipple, the latest anti-Biden book, which tells the facts on how bad he was behind the scenes. It wasn't just his judgment that was bad. His mind was bad, but we all knew it. Why are people making money off it? the latest revelations as the Dems meltdown continues. And we have a front runner who did, I think, a good thing. Went to the White House, a Democratic front runner, and made nice with President Trump. And now she is getting excoriated.
Number one.
This was driven by the president's strategy. He and I had a long talk on Sunday, and this was his strategy all along. You might even say that he goaded China into a bad position.
Yes, that was Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. Tariffs trauma on hold as Trump decides China's the problem, and the market's deciding now that the U.S.-China trade war is a problem. We're watching the markets. And let me also say it's WRVA, important to bring up. Matt Continente at the bottom of the hour has a fantastic column where he equates what Richard Nixon did and the mistakes he made when it comes to monetary policy and trade and how Trump could learn from it. And Rich Herrera, the host of Richmond's Morning News on WRVA, is also coming your way. But first things first, so let's talk about what went down yesterday. Reportedly, when the president saw that the bond market was shaky and that Japan was selling our treasuries, which means our allies were saying our economy is not reliable, that's when the president made his move. It also is noteworthy that a group of senators who were on with Sean Hannity talked to the president through the television and then actually picked up the phone, Lindsey Graham, Tim Scott, John Thune, and said, Mr. President, you know, what's the plan? Because it's getting a lot of people's 401k and a lot of your biggest supporters a little shaky. So in the end, we have a 90-day pause. What does it mean? Victor Davis Hanson, a historian in his own right, weighs in on the amount of people that have already pledged to reconfigure our trade relationships. Cut 12.
You know, when 70 nations say they want to negotiate and Trump gives them a breathing spell and they want to get in the American market, and then he kind of gives them an extra incentive and say, you guys don't like China as much as we don't like them, and I'm going to go after China, then they see, well, maybe if he goes after China and China's reduced, we're going to have even a greater opportunity for the American market. So it was kind of a twofer. There's a lot of pent-up resentment against China in Europe and Japan and South Korea. And by redirecting it to China right now, by putting everybody else on hold and saying, we're going to negotiate, we're friends, we'll get down to zero tariffs, we can do the VAT tax or the machinations you guys use later. But right now, we'll get to parity and zero, and we're going to look at China. That was a message they liked in many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I mean, if the president can come up with 70 new trade deals in the matter of 90 days, I think it's going to be pretty encouraging. I do know this. When it comes to China, they have gotten now their tariffs on us, from us, up to 125%. We have an 84% tariff on products that we want to get from them. How does it break down between the countries? U.S. exports to China, $143 billion, kind of a lot. U.S. imports from China, $438 billion, kind of a lot more. So the people that have come to the table is Japan, South Korea, UK, Switzerland, Malaysia, Singapore, Brazil, Colombia, Turkey, Australia, Italy. I see the Philippines too. Concessions immediately. Vietnam, please give them some relief. Taiwan, they need some relief. India, they take advantage of us big time. Thailand, Indonesia, and Israel. The ones that are retaliated, China, the EU, and Canada. The EU has held off. The most belligerent seems to be Germany, who, by the way, are just tanking. And Mexico says no action. So they're just waiting it out to see how it goes. And look, I'll let the economists wait it out. And I think most of us just want to make sure we don't go into recession and want to make sure that 60% of the country is involved somehow in the market, whether it's a 401k or a pension plan. You know, if you're in a union, your pension is in a pension plan and things like Tesla. So everybody, I can't say is this is just about rich people on Wall Street. It's about working class who are counting on that money in the future, and it's already bounced back to a degree. So the other big story is the failings of Joe Biden. And we know that he couldn't walk. We know he fell. We know he couldn't do interviews. We know he turned down the Super Bowl interview. They didn't want to talk about the Robert Hur report, so they decide not to let him do an interview that would have gone to 400 or 500 million people. Here's Chris Whipple, co-author or the author of Uncharted, on who was responsible that Joe Biden was actually trying to run and trying to run again. Cut 13.
She was undoubtedly Joe Biden's closest advisor. There's no question about that. And the thing that's so remarkable about this story is that anybody who's ever had to take the car keys away from an octogenarian grandfather knew that Joe Biden shouldn't be running for re-election, much less trying to govern at the age of 86, which he would have been at the end of the first term. And yet, nobody, including Jill Biden, as far as we know, ever sat Joe Biden down and said, hey, listen, boss, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, how about that? He went on, cut 14.
The most telling moment there was right after that disastrous debate when Jill Biden went, they went back to the hotel and Jill said, you did an amazing job. I'm paraphrasing now, but you were amazing. You answered every question, she said. You would think that, you know, if it, most wives might be saying, hey, listen, sweetie, are you sure you want to go ahead with this? And maybe should we see a doctor? Now, listen, we don't know. Maybe they had that conversation behind closed doors.
And I still think we're just scratching the surface. His own doctor wouldn't say anything. The Parkinson's expert was in and out of the White House something like 25 times. And yet he's still going to run again and mad at Nancy Pelosi for forcing him out. And they were going to let him run again if he didn't have that meltdown in June. It would have been, if they waited for the conventions, it would have been too late. So who, where do you go from here? How about George Stephanopoulos? Why this guy still has a job is beyond me. I mean, he's so angry. He already got sued and lost in an out-of-court settlement to Donald Trump. You watch him on Sunday shows. He has just disdain for anything Republican. And then he writes this in Unchartered. It says, Stephanopoulos questioned the president gently. Remember, when the president wanted to prove that he was okay, he called Stephanopoulos for an interview. And Stephanopoulos knew that Biden was shot. So Stephanopoulos questioned by the president gently, like a grandson. Afterward, when I asked the ABC anchor by email for his impression, he replied, heartbreaking up close. But I'm not going to say anything. After all, I'm just a journalist. You don't want to actually say anything out loud? If you thought that Donald, do you think that if he interviewed Trump and he said Trump had lost his mind, literally lost his mind like Joe Biden has, do you think for a second Stephanopoulos wouldn't have said to anybody that would listen? Of course. 1-866-408-7669. That's some of the things we're hearing about that book. But you look at what Governor Whitmer did yesterday. She went to the White House and she visited with the president. Why? As she said before, she's from Michigan, and the president is extremely popular in Michigan. And she said, and she came out and said, this is what NBC's reporting. Whitmer joined Trump in the Oval Office. She was scheduled to meet privately with him and discuss Michigan issues. That wasn't how it ultimately played out. Instead, she stood by as he signed several executive orders, including two, calling for Justice Department probes of officials who served in his first administration and called him out for falsely claiming the 2020 election was stolen. Whitmer spokesperson said the governor was surprised that she was brought into the Oval Office during the Trump press conference without any notice of the subject matter. Her presence is not an endorsement of the actions taken or statements made at the event. So she's getting blowback for showing up, which I think is wrong. But she did actually say that we could need some help in the auto industry when it comes to tariffs, especially in Detroit, right? So you look at potential presidential candidates for 2028, if you'd put the list together. You got Mayor Pete, Gavin Newsom, Tim Walz, Governor J.B. Pritzker. Not one of them I think is legitimate. Jared Polis and Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Or it's going to be Stephen A. Smith. Not sure. When we come back, Rich Herrera joins us, just taking over the morning show right here in Richmond, Virginia. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by SelectQuote. Life insurance can have a huge impact on our family's future. With SelectQuote, getting covered with the right policy for you is simple and affordable. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents will tailor your experience to find a life insurance policy for your needs in as little as 15 minutes. And SelectQuote partners with carriers that provide policies for many conditions. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Go to selectquote.com/SpotifyPod today to get started.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Bottom of the hour, Matthew Continente joins us. He's with the Washington Free Beacon. Did a great column comparing what Nixon tried to do and some warnings at what Trump is trying to do and reconfigure our trade relationships around the world and get our fiscal house in order. Rich Herrera is with us now, host of Richmond's Morning News on News Radio WRVA. And keep in mind, Rich just joined and took over the morning show. I join them once a week. Hey, Rich.
Hey,
you should welcome me.
I was going to say thank you so much for coming to Richmond and spending some time with us. And last night we had a wonderful time on that stage show. And I have heard from a lot of my friends like, hey, you're talking to Brian Kilmeade today. So I said, yeah, absolutely. So I just wanted to thank you for coming out to Richmond and spending time with us.
Yeah, I think you're obviously going to love it here. And this is a first class station. And now you're going to be in the eye of the storm because you got the special election. Glenn Youngkin shocked the world when he beat Terry McAuliffe. And now they're going to look to see if Winston Sears if the Virginia's residents want to continue what Youngkin started.
And can Winston Earl Sears be able to continue his legacy, and how active will the Republicans be? So we talked about this last night, Brian. You've talked about this. Showing up and voting for Donald Trump once every 4 years is great, but Republicans have to be engaged 24/7 because you see on the Democratic side and the progressive side, they're energized, they're angry, they're going to show up every single time. And Republicans, if you just sit back, they're going to clean your clock.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in a purple state like this. New Jersey has started going more and more red, but see what happens. I think it has a lot to do with what Trump does with the economy. I mean, people want the prices to come down. They want interest rates to come down. They want the housing market unfrozen. And one is linked to the other.
You know, the tough part, Brian, is if you're a Republican, normally you've got a job, you've got kids, you're coaching Little League. You don't go out and get involved all that much. You show up and you vote on Election Day, and then you live your life. On the other side, they're so passionate. Brian, have you ever met a Republican activist community organizer? I never have.
No, yeah.
I don't think there is one.
I mean, I saw the Tea Party was the closest I saw.
Right. So they're motivated. They work 24/7 at this. If Republicans don't get involved, we're all going to see a setback. And if you have someone as good as Earl Sears, and I saw her with you on television today, great story, inspiring story. But we've got to get out and support her.
Yeah. So what's your take on the pause that Donald Trump put into effect?
You know, I was talking with a college professor of mine. He taught at the Citadel. And he said, this is the highest stakes poker game you've ever seen. And he said, Donald Trump has to play his cards right. I think he got a good card on the turn last night. Everybody knows that he's that twitchy eye guy that you just don't know what's going to happen. Ronald Reagan was that way when he talked about the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union wasn't really sure how they could play him. And I think people are finding out that Donald Trump is going to stand there and he's going to do what he says what he's going to do. And the way that he approaches things, that he goes out and he kind of provokes you, and then he kind of runs all over you and puts pressure on you, and then finally you understand that he's not going to back down. Everybody else around the world figured that out except for China, and I think that Xi Jinping finally has a leader that's playing the long game instead of worrying what happens quarter to quarter, because Trump did not budge, didn't blink an eye when you saw the markets take a dip, and he stood tall, and now he puts that pause on, and you see Wall Street taking off today.
Yeah, well, not today. So far, it was the futures were okay, but right now we're down, looks like, 808 points. So I think people worry about if China's going to start flooding all these free markets with their stuff. I think you could stop that, and I don't think you'd have to accept that, but that's telling Walmart, Kmart, Home Depot, you can't do that. So we'll see how that goes. I think the president, does it surprise you the president caught most of his staff by surprise when he said that, including his trade representative who was on Capitol Hill?
Right. You know, the thing is that he doesn't test everything. He doesn't look at it, stick his finger in the air. He has his instincts and he's honest. And when you look at Donald Trump, and you know him, you've met him personally, he says things and he doesn't really think about, well, am I going to be a politician? How is this focus group going to go? How is this focus group going to go? Mm-hmm. And people don't know how to react to that because he's genuine.
Right. The other thing, we're talking to Rich Herrera. Rich, the other thing that's going on now is the President of the United States is clearing house of the people that were attacking him.
Yeah.
But he also is looking there. There's a lot of people in the House, especially, that are looking to investigate what Joe Biden was actually up to and what he was capable of. Does it surprise you that there are three books out telling the story of an incapacitated president?
It you know what it does? And me and my friends were sitting and talking about it. And I have a lot of friends in sports, so we have these text messages, and we don't dare have these on Twitter at the time. But now that you see all these things that we thought were going on, stuff that you would talk about on television, you talk about on the radio show, but we didn't have concrete proof. Now that you look, and I just got done reading Jonathan Allen's book. He's going to come on with us next week, and I know you sat down and talked with him. Everything that we thought was going on was happening, and the fact that these people are looking me in the eye and lying to my face just infuriates me.
Right. It's true. Remember this, this is Joe Biden. When they're trying to get him out, he wouldn't budge. Remember him saying this, Cut 17?
I convinced myself of two things. I'm the most qualified person to beat him, and I know how to get things done.
If you can be convinced that you cannot defeat Donald Trump, will you stand down?
With the friends of, and if the Lord Almighty comes out and tells me that, I might do that.
Unless the old Lord Almighty, I guess that's really what he calls Nancy Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi. And when you go into some of these books in the great detail of who's pulling the strings, the people that were in Park City, Utah, the people in Hollywood, the people in New York, that were cutting him off and the infighting, and then it was the most undemocratic thing that a Democratic Party could ever do.
And guess what? They were doing it all the time.
All the time.
They did it so Hillary Clinton would win. They did it so Kamala Harris would be number two. And then they were stuck with bad candidates. Rich, congratulations on the move and joining Richmond. I look forward to talking to you every week.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, back in a moment.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
They say be cool. They were saying about, say, just be cool. It's going to work out. It's going to work out. And it's working out. I thought that people were jumping a little bit out of line. They were getting yippy, you know. They were getting a little bit yippy, a little bit afraid, unlike these champions. Because we have a big job to do. No other president would have done what I did. Nothing's over yet, but we have a tremendous amount of spirit from other countries, including China. China wants to make a deal. They just don't know how quite to go about it.
Really? I don't think China wants to make a deal at this point. But let's ask Matthew Continenti that. Matthew's got a great column out. And also, he writes for the Washington Free Beacon. And you always see him with Brett Baer, too. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Hey, first off, who won round one of this battle? Yeah.
Round one, let's see. I think right now America is in a stronger position vis-a-vis China. I do believe that America has more leverage over the Chinese economy than vice versa. And where things have settled today at the end of round one is that we're seeing that this trade war is focused on China and separating the two economies. It won't be easy, and there's going to be a lot of tumult, but I think that right now we're in the stronger position against China.
So this is what really moved Donald Trump to make his move. Jamie Dimon on with Maria, Cut 5.
I'm taking a calm view, but I think it could get worse if we don't make some progress here. And, of course, you know, trade wars, you saw China raise the race today, you know, and people are going to get angry, and they're going to have responses, and every country's got choices. So there are short-term choices, there are long-term choices.
Do you personally expect a recession?
I am going to defer to my economists at this point, but I think probably that's a likely outcome.
But they've changed their mind. Goldman Sachs has anyway and says now recession not likely, but the market has lost about 800 to 900 points, depending on what minute it is.
Yeah, I mean, Dimon speaks a lot of sense on these business matters the past couple of years. I thought that was important. I think what happened overnight between Tuesday and Wednesday in the Treasury market, U.S. bonds also alarmed the White House. They didn't want some type of financial crisis coming this weekend where the Fed would have to be involved. And so the pause stopped that. The yields on our bonds are slightly lower today, not spiking. So I think what we have to take from this experience on round one is it's one thing to attempt to decouple the United States and China. You know, China is our adversary, Brian. It's working against us. Its abuse of the world trading system has harmed American workers. And, of course, it has malign intent in other areas as well. So it's one thing to have tariffs imposed on China. And let's remember, the tariffs that Trump imposed in the first term, Biden kept during his term. It's another thing to have the global tariffs that were very harsh, including on American allies. And I think that aspect of the trade war is what sparked the panic. And it's why the Trump administration has decided, let's pause for 90 days and let's partake in these negotiations so that we can have deals with our allies and have a united front against China.
And I like with Scott Bessent in front. I think he's got a leveler head, yet he understands Trump. He's not contradicting him. I think they're on the same page. I hope he now has the lead. But you wrote a great book. A great column. I had no idea about this. I just heard that I remember Nixon was the one who took us off the gold standard. But Nixon was one of the first to really attack what he thought was an imbalance in our trade relations. Can you bring us back to that time and tell us how it relates to now?
Sure. Well, back in 1971, Richard Nixon was facing a different economy. I mean, it was a stagflation, so you had unemployment and inflation. You had the beginnings of deindustrialization, American manufacturing jobs being lost to technology, to productivity advances, but also to international competition with the rise of, at that point, the Western European economies and the Japanese economy. And there was at the beginning of a run on U.S. Debt and U.S. currency. And so Nixon faced a choice. He needed to do something dramatic to get out of this box he found himself in the summer of 1971. And so he announced his new economic policy. That meant delinking the dollar from gold, but it also meant imposing a 10% tariff, familiar, on all U.S. imports. And this was a huge shock to the global financial system and trading system in a way that Donald Trump's Liberation Day was as well. So the question is, will there be the same reaction? You know, the markets really liked the new economic policy in the short term, but the longer term, the new economic policy failed to address the underlying problems in the economy. In this case, in Liberation Day, we saw the market react very negatively. The question is, when all of the rest of the Trump policies come online, will we have a better outcome that actually balances our economy in the long term?
So Nixon had to back out of it. You know, he had the other problems with Vietnam, the other problems with a aggressive Soviet Union. But Nixon had to back out of it, correct?
He did. So there was a negotiation in the end of 1971. But the other aspect we should mention, too, that I left out was he also imposed wage and price controls. I mean, a huge imposition on the American economy. Those remained, actually, for quite some time to varying degrees until Ronald Reagan became president a decade later. Now, that's the difference between the new economic policy and Liberation Day. Donald Trump is not advocating or imposing wage and price controls on the economy. He's just leveling this 10% tariff and the massive tariffs against China at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, he's not slowing down. Remember, we thought that Signal story was going to get bigger than life. It seems like two decades ago. Now we have the president casually mentions on Tuesday, Saturday, we're having direct talks in Oman with Iran. And I think Steve Witkoff is leading it. I feel much better if Rubio was leading it, wouldn't you?
I would prefer that the Secretary of State have a major role in any potential negotiation or meeting with the Iranian regime. The Ayatollahs have made their intent clear. They want to destroy Israel, and America is the big state, and we're the main problem, according to Iran, in the world. So you want to have someone who has the Congress behind him, who is the top diplomatic official. You know, Witkoff is a very trusted advisor to the president, Brian, and I think that Trump relies on Witkoff. For me, the big fear is I don't want to see a repeat of the 2015 nuclear deal between Obama and Iran. That set American national security back. Donald Trump, of course, a very vocal critic of the deal, got us out of it, called us the worst deal ever. Hope we avoid a repeat of history as the outcome of these talks.
Right, exactly. It's got to be quick because Israel's not going to wait too much longer. There's a vulnerability there. I want to fast forward over to Ukraine, where I was stunned to find out that we estimate about 200 Chinese soldiers are fighting with the Russians. Okay, they got North Koreans, they got Yemenis, and now they have the Chinese who said they were going to be impartial.
Yeah, yeah.
What, that
you
is,
know, we,
go ahead.
We've known that China has been giving support to Russia. I mean, there's diplomatic support, of course, that partnership between Putin and Xi Jinping. There's been technological support. There has been oil, energy support, financial support by buying Russian energy. But we just find out this week that actually there are more Chinese nationals appearing. This just reinforces the idea that Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran are operating as a new axis of aggression in the 21st century. They're not always coordinating operationally, but they have the same aim. The aim is to defeat America and her allies. And so it's going to make it very hard for America to try to peel Russia off when these two powers have become so entwined. It makes it all the more important, by the way, to get our economic house in order and to begin rebuilding the American military like President Trump has said he wants to do.
And it looks like Pete Hegseth's asking for $1 trillion to do that. At the same time, Doge has got to come out and lean it out. But I am concerned about this. Also, I'm concerned about a bad deal in Ukraine. We have to. The Russians are showing no interest, a legitimate interest in bringing the fighting to an end. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we thought we had a ceasefire in the Black Sea, or we thought we had a ceasefire on energy infrastructure, but it seems as though neither side really believes in a ceasefire. And of course, we had this terrible Russian attack on Ukrainian President Zelensky's hometown last weekend, where 9 children were killed. There has to be some point at which the United States and President Trump understand that Russia is not taking our desire for peace seriously. And so there has to be some cost on Russia economically, diplomatically, politically, for continuing this war. And I think Trump understands that. He said that he's very unhappy with Russian behavior and aggression over the past few weeks. But pretty soon he's going to have to face a moment of decision where he's going to have to think about what consequences he must impose. And this is the case, of course, throughout the world. I think President Trump is right to give diplomacy a chance. He's right to try to end these wars peacefully. But we find again and again in history that these powers that start these wars and that build these nuclear programs like Iran, they're not interested in peace. And we have to come to the moment where we recognize that and act accordingly.
I think so, too. He's given it every shot. Vladimir Putin is not taking the off-ramp. So I think we have to continue to arm the Ukrainians and just let them fight, because they are making progress, especially if we give them the weapons they need at the time in which they ask. I know that's a controversial move with this Congress. Matt Continenti, thanks so much. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You got 1-866-408-7669. I'll be able to take some of your calls in a moment. Also, just a quick reminder, I'll be back here in Richmond, Virginia, September 27th at the Carpenter Arena. And don't forget, on the 21st of June in Dayton, Ohio. That's going to be a big show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for history, liberty, and laughs.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I'm distracted by Brett Baer's hair. It's so beautiful. If I had that kind of hair, I'd be so happy.
The best
so
hair.
Happy with myself. You can't see any scalp anywhere. It's just all hair. It's beautiful. It's like if you wanted to like put a wig on a bald guy, like you would make it like that. Like, bro, I'm going to make you hot.
So Joe Rogan likes your hair. Did you know that?
I heard that. That's pretty good. I mean, I have a lot of hair. I mean, Joe does not have a lot of hair. But.
Right. But he has a bigger upper body, according to reports. Yes, and that just happened on our show exclusively. Brett Baer commented on Brett Baer's hair as presented by Joe Rogan only. That is our exclusive, and don't be surprised if people run with that. But he was just weighing in. People are emailing me, too, and we're talking about the Joe Biden situation where we know he was shot. No one would admit it. Now people want to make money off it. Judy tells me, Brian, review Jen Psaki's press briefings. In one, she states that that stuck. If you ever dealt with someone who has Alzheimer's or dementia, says it all. My mother and mother-in-law had memory issues and things would get stuck in their minds. Check with memory care facilities about this. Jen Psaki said that was going on some time ago with the statement that that stuck. So I think that's a little drilling down. I don't even think you need to drill down and see double meanings. All you have to do is watch. I also hear the stories that he would walk into a small fundraiser, 20 people. It'd be a prompter there, little cards on what to say. Would often repeat the same story verbatim, back to back. I mean, if I did that one time, I would turn myself into a facility. I mean, can you imagine doing this in front of some of the richest, most successful people in the world who want to make you president? And at one point, don't you think that would matter? Gene writes me and says this. About the debt, my husband has a good idea to reduce the national debt. Example, 5% of all political donations over $5,000 to a candidate for a national office go towards the U.S. debt. Donated money has already been taxed, supposedly, and is not taken from a family budget. What about that? I just don't think it's going to be enough. I don't think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it's going to be enough of an idea. But people are writing for everything, about everything. For the most part, I think I was dealing with a diner of 220 people rotating in and out. Not one person, I would say working class, well, one person said they were disappointed with the president's first 80 days. I mean, we're going to come up on 100 soon. That would be great to get into the White House for that. But not one person said, yeah, I'm a little disappointed. What people do want, and they're getting, and they understand he can only do so much, they want to see the president bring prices down. That's the big thing. So we'll see about that. The subplot is who's going to lead and who's going to present an alternative. Ezra Klein wrote a book, and he talks about different ways in which Democrats could actually be innovative, how they've let in these inner cities rot and regulations and the green push has alienated so many Americans, the condescending tone. So let me ask you, I'm going to put out a few voices. Tell me if these voices, are ones that could lead America to a brighter future. Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett yesterday talked about Donald Trump. Cut 22.
My Republican colleagues are here using today to continue pushing this false narrative of sanctuary cities harboring criminals. Yet right here in D.C., we have a 34-count felon being harbored in the White House. The hypocrisy coming from your side of the aisle over concerns regarding lawlessness is outrageous.
Okay. First off, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of illegal immigrants hanging out in sanctuary cities because, as we find out, when cops ask you, when you think you have gotten a transaction, driving drunk or assault, they can't say, do you belong here in sanctuary cities? And when I was in doing this story in Los Angeles, this ugly story about this illegal immigrant soccer coach who abused two kids, who was accused in 22 and 24 of doing that. And then in 25, he killed a kid, 13 years old. Those are the accusations. From another country, here illegally, not registered, stuck across the border. Nobody was able to ask. You get a new DA and get rid of Gascon, and he starts looking into it, but his hands are going to be tied. You can't stop the next illegal immigrant criminal because you can't ask where they're from. All right, so Crockett, that's no leadership. You want to point out that Donald Trump, that sham trial, the American people voted. They could not care less. He got more votes this time after that sham trial than he did last time. So, okay, what about Tim Walz? Is he making sense here? Cut 21.
I don't think we should be the party that demonizes someone because they're able to afford something or they're able to work hard and got something. What we should demonize is people like Elon Musk and those people that be at. You know, that's different. That's different.
I don't know where his message is there, because he was also somebody who said he picks up his phone and he sees how much Tesla's losing in stock price. And it just lifts him up and puts him in a great mood. So I think that Governor Whitmer yesterday, going to the White House, I guess she was caught there and it looked like she was supporting executive orders. But evidently she says, I do support tariffs. Our state of Michigan's been extremely hurt by inadequacy and imbalances on trade, especially as it relates to cars. That's why these trade unions were lining up with the president on Liberation Day. It's about Main Street, not Wall Street, although they are very much connected. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show on this Thursday edition. I come to you from Richmond, Virginia. The WRVA is the home right now where I'm coming from. One of our great affiliates, big event last night. We're back in action now. Charles Gasparino is standing by, leading the charge and trying to unwind what's happening on Wall Street and Main Street. Ian Bremmer will be joining me at the bottom of the hour. If there's somebody more knowledgeable and savvy about what's going on around the world in potential conflicts, I don't know who it is, Ian Bremmer from Eurasia Group. And before we get to Charlie Gasparino, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
But with Iran, if it requires military, we're going to have military. Israel will obviously be very much involved in that. He'll be the leader of that. But nobody leads us. We do what we want to do.
But they'll be leading that, Israel front and center, as anti-Semitism crackdown on college campuses continues, as a former prime minister over in Princeton of Israel is heckled. Unbelievable.
Number two.
Here's what they knew as early as 2020 for sure. What they knew was that Joe Biden couldn't possibly run a regular campaign, that he wasn't up to it. That's why they hid him in the basement.
True. Chris Whipple, he has a book about called Uncharted. The Dems' meltdown continues as one frontrunner makes nice with President Trump and gets huge backlash as President Biden's incapacity is revealed in more and more detail. But it is too late.
Number one.
This was driven by the president's strategy. He and I had a long talk on Sunday, and this was his strategy all along. You might even say that he goaded China into a bad position.
Yup, tariff trauma on hold as Trump decides China's the problem, and it seems they are up for the fight against us. We watch the markets in your money. And right now, stocks are falling after a massive rally yesterday. So it's down about 900 points. If you look at some of the platforms, Apple and Tesla are down 3% and 6% respectively. And NVIDIA is down 5.4%. Meta is down 4%. So people are pulling back. Why is that? Charles Gasparino of Fox Business Network and senior correspondent there and New York Post columnist. What's going on in the market today?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Yesterday was a relief rally, right? Now, then stocks generally go back to trying to factor in what's happening. And still there's, no matter how many times Scott Bessent says that, this was their plan all along. This really wasn't. The markets forced their hand, particularly the bond market, because the bond market is essentially signaling bad stuff. That's why we had a lousy auction the day before they caused the pause. That's why you had massive yield spikes that Tuesday night, which were almost unprecedented. I've never seen anything like that. It was a clear, wicked sell-off that suggested there was real problems in the plumbing that this tariff stuff was causing.
See, what does that mean? What does that mean in the plumbing?
So if you know anything about bonds, I've been covering bonds my entire life. I know almost too much about it. There's the plumbing of the markets is this whole system where banks and companies essentially borrow to operate. They have to borrow short term because no company has the money on hand. Like Fox doesn't have the money on hand to cut you and I a check every week. They just, they don't have enough. You, me, and everybody else, right? So what do? They turn to the short-term borrowing markets, right? They essentially go out and issue commercial paper. It's easier. It's more manageable. It's kind of cheap because, it's short-term debt, and it works. And everybody gets paid, right? If they couldn't pay us, that would be a real problem. They wouldn't have a company. People would walk out. So that's what they do. That market in of itself, that plumbing, that bond market, which controls all that, started to implode on Tuesday night. where people were not able to borrow on that short-term basis. And not only that, the U.S. government needs to refinance its debt. That market started to implode. On top of that, when that market started to implode, 10-year, the interest rates on the 10-year and the 30-year went through the roof. Now, what does that mean? That all affects borrowing rates for consumers. It makes it more expensive for companies and for consumers, particularly homeowners, to buy houses. It was real bad stuff that was being signaled. And it was across the board in the plumbing of the markets known as the bond markets. You could call it the credit markets. There's a whole bunch of ways this is described. But it's much more important than the stock market because it essentially drives the stock market. If you get all those higher yields, stocks would implode. Now, if we had a 5% yield on a 10-year, which is where it was heading, and I'm pretty sure Scott Bessent made this really clear to President Trump, well, guess what? The NASDAQ, instead of going down 5% a day, might go down 10% a day because people would start saying we're in real problems. Actually, they start buying bonds at that point because it's a cheaper – you get more bang for your buck than taking the risk on NVIDIA. Or you go into cash. I mean, that's kind of what goes on. And that's what we were facing, a real plumbing problem with the markets. Now, does that problem still exist? It's not as acute as it was. The pause has people breathing a sigh of relief. Remember, some of this is a confidence game as well. But some of those underlying problems are still there. And, you know, a lot of it is not Donald Trump's fault. And here's why. He inherited a stock market that was way overvalued, just so you know. I mean, NVIDIA was like trading at some astronomical level compared to its earnings. They were way out of bounds, right? 60 times price earned PE. That's nuts. The average PE is like 20, right? Three times as much. AI might be great, but it's not doing the great stuff now based on its earnings, right? So that's one thing. On top of that, we literally went into a debt frenzy under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, particularly at the end where they essentially started printing money to prop up the economy to get Kamala Harris elected. That is all true. And they did it in the most nefarious ways. They issued a lot of short-term debt, which needs to be rolled over. All of that is weighing on the markets. I really believe if it wasn't for this tariff thing, the markets might have sold off on something else. There would have been a catalyst. Tariffs was the easy one because it caused people to look at valuations, you know, immediately. But it could have been a terrorist attack. It could have been whatever. But he inherited this. So my guess is that the markets today are reflecting that those underlying fissures that I just mentioned are really not dealt with. I mean, the tariffs might be the instigation and it might make it a little worse, but something else is there and something else could happen. And I think that's where you're getting out of the markets trading off today.
Maybe, Charlie. I'll tell you what, there's something else. So the markets are down about 900 points right now. So do you think that now that China's digging in and we're digging in, 84% right. tariffs on our stuff, 104 on their stuff, but we get a lot more of their stuff. There's some talk in the New York Post today that it looks like China might start just making a whole bunch of products and dumping them through the European market and our market. Would we accept that? Could this happen?
Well, we shouldn't. But, you know, if you're going to go to war with someone on trade, that's the type of stuff they pull. By the way, it's not like they have an economy based on anything real. They make up accounting. They use slave labor. You know, go down the line. You know, they can kind of press a button here and do stuff like this. You know, we can't do that. You know, so I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, and it sounds like, I mean, I don't know the sourcing on that. I actually didn't read the story, but if you told me that they were planning that, I wouldn't be surprised. That's stuff that they do. You know, they're a complete mercantilistic economy. They have a very poor population still in many respects, right? They have a high rate of poverty and a lot of people that are in poverty. And they deal with that poverty through trade. You know, that's kind of like the one weapon they got. They have trade. And they produce stuff cheaply, and they use slave labor. So if you take that away from them, they might get desperate. So this could get really hairy. And, you know, by the way, that's a pressure point that the markets are factoring in now. But, you know, if stocks were trading at their sort of quote-unquote fair value, they weren't overvalued, we would not have this sort of, like, puking of stock prices that we're having now. It would be a different, more, you know, it would be a different dynamic going forward.
So, Charlie, the way we have it, U.S. imports to China, $143 billion. U.S. imports from China, $438 billion. The U.S. deficit with China, $295 billion. So when people say that they have leverage over us, is that short-sighted or because they need to sell us their stuff? We are the top market. Can they make it up elsewhere?
Not easy, but, you know, if they try, it could get really hairy. Just because they're willing to go, they have the type of economy that's situated to go nuclear. You know, do you see what I'm saying? I mean, let's be clear. Like, we don't have that economy. If we didn't have that economy, if we had an economy where we can go nuclear on trade, Donald Trump would not have paused. I mean, his hand was forced. There's no doubt about that.
And you think it was by the bonds? You know, he talked about
it was
Jamie,
bonds, but remember bonds. The bonds selling off would have sparked an even bigger depression in stocks. I mean, it's all related. But, yeah, the bond thing is what – from what I understand, the bond thing is what really freaked out Bessent, because he has to sell the Treasury debt. I mean, remember, that's what he does. Part of his job, right? To finance a deficit. If ever higher interest rates are being demanded, which is what was happening, he has a big problem on his hands. On top of that, in the next 2 years, he's got gazillions of dollars of debt that need to be refinanced because Janet Yellen issued so much short-dated debt that you need to refinance that debt. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's just it's a pickle. So, and it's a matrix. And, you know, you can break it down all you want. It's complicated. And but, you know, one thing I do know is this stock market was overvalued. It was looking for reasons to trade off. And, you know, it got a good one with the tariff stuff.
Yeah, so the response to Trump's tariffs, trying to negotiate Japan, South Korea, the UK, Switzerland, Malaysia, Singapore, Brazil, Colombia, Turkey, Australia, and Italy. That's a lot. They offered concessions in Vietnam, Taiwan, India, Thailand, Indonesia, and Israel. How do you would the markets respond as President Trump starts announcing good trade deals with all these nations, two a day, three a day? Would the markets start getting encouraged by that?
I think so. It's hard to tell. Like, where people are focused on. Are they going to then switch their wall of worry to China and you know, reset valuations based on what's going on in China? Remember, like, a lot of these tech companies, I mean, what was driving the markets over the last sort of two, three years? It was, like, about seven stocks, right? And they were all tech companies, like Apple and stuff like that. And they all had significant, you know, operations in China. So does that mean the market start focusing on Apple's, you know, the cost of Apple, you know, relocating, domesticating its factories and all that? And, you know, listen, you're asking me, like, will the markets trade off? I'm not saying what's good public policy.
Yeah.
It may be really good public policy, bring them all here and screw the markets. I'm just saying that it's if you think that's going to be easy, you know, the markets are going to, like, you know, stocks are going to take a hit. Bonds might freak out. I mean, this is difficult stuff. And it's difficult stuff because, you know, I can't stress this enough. He was handed a pile of you know what. I mean, like, the amount of debt that Joe Biden, you know, in the last 3 months of Joe Biden's presidency, they issued like $300 billion in debt. That's like insane. They just ramp it up. That's on top of what they should have spent. And they did it, a lot of it in short-term borrowing, which means you got to kind of roll it over. It's due soon.
So why would they do that? Why would you do that?
To get Kamala Harris elected is the only thing I could think of. Keep the economy juiced. And so some of this is reflective of investors saying, you know, we got to keep paying this stuff. It's expensive. It takes money out of the economy and puts it in the hands of foreigners, which is what it does. On top of that, stocks by normal valuations are overvalued significantly, and now you got a tariff thing to worry about. So, I mean, that's why I'm saying this is, you know, this is kind of like, I don't think it's a quick fix. You know, it's going to be, is it necessary is really the question. I tend to think it is necessary. It is necessary. I'm not sure if it was necessary the way he handled it, the way the president handled it. Did he Should he have got the tax cuts first and the big, beautiful budget, whatever he calls it, first, and, you know, deregulation and DOGE, and then when the economy starts humming, start, you know, going piece by piece with our trade partners and say, this is what we're going to do if you don't stop.
Hey, have you heard from the White House since you made that statement? I watched you live after the president announced a freeze or 90-day pause.
I have not. One guy that's close to Trump said he thought it was more the stock market than the bond market. But we're really talking the same thing, because the stock market would have sold off if they didn't deal with the bond market. And Trump came out and kind of contradicted that anyway, said it was like, you know, bonds are getting crazy, he was watching. And all the reporting today confirmed my reporting yesterday. Yeah. I did hear from Bessent's people, and they said thank you. I said something nice about
Twitter. Because he needs to take the lead, right? Don't you agree?
Yes. Yeah. And so listen, if I like aired in what I said yesterday significantly, trust me, they would have been all over me. But hey, I've not heard a word yet.
Right. Absolutely. And we haven't heard much of Peter Navarro either. That's interesting.
Although right. I did see Lutnick on the air last night.
Yes.
I don't think Trump's going to, like, just blow these guys out. I mean, I know everybody's like, who's the first to go? Lutnick, Navarro. First of all, Navarro went to jail for Trump. I don't think he's going to fire him over this. Lutnick raised him a lot of money. I think Trump legitimately likes Lutnick. They go back a long time. Lutnick was a supporter when no one else was. So I don't think
anyone's getting fired. I just think who's got his ear.
Well, I mean, I think he likes the fact that the market's like Bessent's, right?
Yeah.
So, and Bessent takes a more measured approach, and, you know, and I think Trump is obviously, I mean, it's so obvious he's taken Bessent's approach and he's dealing. And Bessent probably told him, well, the other guys didn't, look at the bond markets.
Yep.
I'm telling you that is what happens. That guy looks at bond markets.
I hear you.
He obsesses about the 10-year.
But when, you know, Charlie and I assessed to get your assessment on what's happening right now. It's an exciting time. Charles Gasparino, thanks so much. Back in a moment. Right.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, we got Ian Bremmer coming back when we return, and we're seeing a few things that need to be defined and really fleshed out, and that is that Chinese fighters are now fighting with the Russians in Ukraine. Really. I mean, one thing about Ukraine, it is all Ukrainians. Yeah, it's Western weapons. Their weapons, and they're making their own, but it's the Western weapons and the support. Now they have North Koreans, Chinese, Yemeni, and they're leaving a lot of their upper-class kids alone. They've lost about 1 million people in a brain drain and lost hundreds of thousands casualties, dead and injured, from the battlefield, losing about 2,500 a week. I don't know how long that's going to stand. And we're going to talk about the big meetings with Iranians and the Trump team and I think it's led by Steve Witkoff, in Oman. And the goal is immediately to stop their weapons program. They can't have it. The only thing people have brought up to me that makes sense that the Israelis would go for is a Libyan style. And that is, just come get it. Ukrainian style, just come and get it. South African style, if you want, just come and get it. And when they did. But just saying, no weapons inspectors, can't look here, can't look there. That's the Obama deal. That sunsets in 10 years, that would have been dead already. That's the Obama deal. Ian Bremmer's next. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is a moment. Iran is on the cusp of having not only a nuclear weapon, but a program, right? So multiple capabilities across a broad range of delivery systems. I hope President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu spent time talking about this yesterday.
They had to have. Come on. He hasn't come over for trade.
No, I think that's right. It's also the case that you still have to eliminate Hamas, right? This is a full-on challenge. The president's done good work going after the Houthis. I hope they stay at it. This is a full-spectrum effort to once and for all deny Iran the capacity to inflict harm on America.
That was former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, who is now teaching at Columbia, another hot spot, talking about what is happening over in Iran, what the stakes are, and what the talks in Oman might be like. With me right now is Ian Bremmer from the Eurasia Group. He's founder there. Ian, what are the stakes on Saturday, and were you surprised that this meeting was pulled off?
I'm not hugely surprised. Iran, as you know, Brian, is in such a horrible position right now. You know, they've clearly not been able to strike Israel effectively despite Israeli strikes on Iran. They've lost their capabilities with pretty much all of their proxies in the region, with the exception to the Houthis, who they have the least control over. Hezbollah, the most powerful of them, has been decapitated by Israel, and there's nothing Iran can do to respond. The Saudis and the Emiratis, who are some of the closest allies to the U.S. and specifically the Trump administration in the world, favor the United States engaging with Iran and trying to get a deal done. And so I'm not surprised. And we know that Israel is itching to just like get rid of Iran's nuclear program for good militarily. So I think that this is a do or die moment for the Iranian regime. And we're seeing that the Supreme Leader and the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps are willing to bend. Now, are they willing to bend enough to get to an agreement with Trump? We're going to see that over the coming weeks. But certainly I'm not surprised at all that they're trying to deal.
Because you know what they said, we will not have direct talks. But I guess we're not technically in direct talks, but I guess they're same in the same building, but there's a mediator between them.
No, but they did say that if the indirect talks go well, they would now be open to direct talks. That is absolutely a new position. Is it technically, you know, sort of a disagreement with what Trump actually said when he was in the White House with the Israeli prime minister a few days ago? Yeah, technically. But the reality is the Iranians are folding here, at least in terms of the initial engagement with the United States. This is a climb down from Iran's position. And that was what Trump was responding to.
Yeah. And here's what he said about should they need to take military action. Cut 26.
But with Iran, if it requires military, we're going to have military. Israel will obviously be very much involved in that. He'll be the leader of that. But nobody leads us. We do what we want to do.
So what do you think he's getting at there, that Israel would do what they did with Iraq and with Syria if they had to and just take out the program on their own? But this would mean our munitions to get the bunker busters capable of blowing up their program.
And it would probably require some Israeli operatives on the ground, frankly, in order to really ensure that they were able to take care of, respond, hit the sites that they believe they have to hit. I suspect that the United States, if this falls apart, would provide that support to Israel. I don't think Trump wants to be involved directly in offensive strikes against Iran itself. He'd rather have the Israelis do it, but the Israelis are prepared to do it. No question in my mind.
Have we delivered the weapons?
Not yet. No. Okay. But again, the fact that you have pre-positioned all of these major bombers in the region, in part because you're hitting the Houthis, but everyone sees that the fact that they're there means that they could very easily be used against Iran. I mean, I don't think the United States could be any clearer in the military orientation that they are. This is more than just a deterrent capacity. This is offensive projection of power, telling the Iranians, you've got one shot here. You better make good use of it.
And they usually do. I mean, they've been astounding over the last 2 years. Okay. With the Houthi rebels, what do your sources tell you the level of damage done after bombing for, I think, 15 straight days?
Kind of limited in terms of, I mean, unless you're going to send troops on the ground, you're going to get a lot of civilians. I mean, there have been some, like, you know, you saw that there was some announcements that a whole bunch of leaders were taken out. In reality, it was like a tribal meeting and wasn't actually military. The Houthis are still showing capabilities of attacking sea lanes. They are able and willing to take a lot of damage to resist that. And of course, you know, what they're using to disrupt not just the United States military, but also all of these civilian ships, they're using incredibly low sophistication, inexpensive weapon systems. And that is something that kind of a fight is very hard for the Americans to stop, especially because there's such a large geography we're talking about.
Interesting that reports from the Institute of Study of War is that the Yemeni government is sending troops after the Houthis. How real is that as a threat to the Houthis?
Not enough. There's been a civil war going on for some time, and it has led to kind of stalemate. Those capabilities are too limited.
So when we look at what's happening in Oman, I kind of want to see that Marco Rubio's taking the lead on this. It looks like Steve Witkoff is. How is he viewed in the region?
Witkoff is, you know, he doesn't have any experience in the region, but everyone understands that he is not just a friend of Trump's, but also very respected. The fact that he happens to be a special envoy who is wildly outranked by Rubio, it does, as you know, Brian, does not mean anything in this administration. It's a question of whether or not you have been tasked by the president to get something done. I mean, Elon Musk, you know, has nominally a very junior position, you know, sort of a volunteer position, yet he has incredible power in his lane. Witkoff has now been given the keys to not only negotiating Middle East conflict resolution, but also Russia-Ukraine. And the Middle Eastern leaders that I have spoken to, several of them from the Gulf that have met directly with Witkoff, have proactively told me that they've been impressed with his willingness to quickly get up to speed on the brief, his understanding of the various positions of the Gulf governments compared to that of Israel and what the Americans want. He's not ideological. He's not like, you know, sort of rigid, that he's there to listen and to engage and to get to a constructive outcome. So I think Witkoff is actually, particularly on the Middle East, I have not heard this from the Ukrainians, but on the Middle East, I think he's actually been pretty effective.
Right. Even though he felt as though the Hamas was double-dealing him or not being sincere, who would have thought, and that's why they're back. And now the IDF reportedly controls 50% of Gaza. So I want to go over to Russia.
I don't think Witkoff is a media figure, and I don't think he did well with Tucker Carlson, and I would have advised him not to do that interview. But I'm talking about his private meetings with key interlocutors, cabinet level, and more on the ground in the Middle East. There he's been effective.
I did not see him with Tucker, my bad. We'll see what happens now.
No, you're bad. I think it's actually you're good, Brian.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I want you to hear what Mike Pompeo told me yesterday about Russia.
There's no doubt Vladimir Putin's going to try and run the string out on this as well, play this for everything he can, get as much land. I don't know how much longer President
Trump will. He's evil, not stupid, right?
He is not stupid. He is evil. He is a bad actor, but he is cunning. And while he screwed up in the invasion, they thought they could roll this thing through. He got that piece strategically wrong. He's still determined to win and prevail. And so he's going to try and drag this out and cut a deal that benefits him and not the United States of America. I don't think President Trump's going to let that happen.
Your thoughts on his thoughts?
I think that's pretty much right. You know, Putin is not interested in ending this war. And in order to get to a ceasefire, Trump is going to have to be willing to play harder ball than he has been willing to against the Russians and against Putin heretofore. He has used a lot of stick against Zelensky. He's even suspended temporarily weapon shipments and intelligence, and that the Ukrainians paid attention to that. I mean, they're like, okay, we get it. We don't want that to happen again. He's not been willing to make those kind of threats to Russia. He has in the last weeks, you know, shown some flashes of impatience and talked about more sanctions. He hasn't stated that if Putin isn't willing to get to a ceasefire, which the Ukrainians have accepted without preconditions. He hasn't said, well, then I'm going to give more weapon systems to Ukraine. He needs to do that. There needs to be consequences for Putin to ignore Trump. And so far, Putin has not felt those consequences. I think that Mike Pompeo has kind of sussed this one in his conversation with you.
Absolutely. So how concerned are you that there is 200 at least Chinese fighters fighting for the with the Russians, along with the North Koreans?
I'm not, honestly. I don't think that those Chinese were sent by the People's Liberation Army. You know that there have been American citizens fighting alongside Ukraine. And I don't know what the numbers are, but it's not one or two. But those are citizens that go, and they're mercenaries, and they're paid, and some of them are like, you know, some of them have Ukrainian lineage, and some of them are just excited about action. You know, China's got 1.4 billion people, 200 people. I mean, if that's a real number, we've seen two that have been captured by Ukraine. And the Ukrainians, to be fair here, Brian, they are not making the allegation that the Chinese have sent them in a way that the North Koreans like have, right? And I mean, individual North Korean citizens can't get out of North Korea. Chinese are actually allowed to travel. So it's a different story. I think there's more headline than story there.
Ian Bremmer, thanks so much. That's why your newsletter is so important. Founder of Eurasia Group. Thanks.
To you, man.
Go get him, Ian. All right. When we come back, I talked to Winsome Sears, the lieutenant governor of Virginia. Can she make the next move and win a general election to become the governor of this state? We'll talk to her about that. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and we were in Richmond, Virginia all day, all morning. We were here last night for a great event, Politics and Pints here, with the great staff of WRVA. But I did have a chance. One of the great things about coming to Richmond is see two political superstars, even Democrats would admit it. Winston Sears, a great personal biography, came out of nowhere to become lieutenant governor of this state. And then Glenn Youngkin shocked the world by beating Terry McAuliffe as a rookie politician with deep pockets and also a lot of natural ability and talent. And all of a sudden, he looked like an experienced politician. So after 4 years in Virginia, you're done. So you can't run for reelection consecutively, even though McAuliffe was in for four, took a break for four, and then was coming back. Maybe Youngkin will try that. But he wants his lieutenant governor to be governor, and so does lieutenant governor. She is working hard. She's going to be going against Abigail Spanberger, the CIA operative who became a congresswoman and now wants to be governor on the Democratic side. So today, this morning, I should say, I talked to the lieutenant governor, who is up early, ready to go, working with the current governor to become the next governor so they could finish off their agenda. And here's my interview with Winsome Sears.
I'm here at Shorty Steiner in beautiful Richmond, Virginia, with the Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears. The Lieutenant Governor wants to be governor, and the campaigning started. It's going to be the first ever in Virginia female-to-female race as you're going against Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger.
Former Congresswoman.
Yes, okay, and she has been running really since 2023. First off, Lieutenant Governor, how do you feel about this matchup?
Oh, I feel excellent. We're doing very well. My opponent knows that she's in trouble because all the policies that she wants will not work for Virginia. And Virginians know that. She wants higher taxes. We don't want that. Virginians want better education opportunities. She only wants one single opportunity, and that's public schools. We want public, private, homeschools, whatever the parents want. They make that decision. And she wants sanctuary cities. We don't want that. We want to be safe in Virginia.
You also were telling me that there's about 900 illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, in your jails. You want them out.
We want the criminal illegal aliens especially out. Why should our tax money pay for them? We have other reasons that we want to spend our hard-earned dollars on, and keeping them in jails is not the idea.
This year, tradition has it that New Jersey and Virginia are the only two states to have the off-year elections. And Glenn Youngkin shocked the world by beating the former governor, Terry McAuliffe, last time. What did you learn working with the first-time governor who's term limited out? What was it like being by his side?
Well, first of all, it felt short because, you know,
he's huge. Yeah.
He's like 6'5", 6'6", and he wears those cowboy boots from time to time.
Yeah, why is that? Why do tall people like Lawrence Jones and the governor wear heels when they're really tall already?
Well, you know, it's a Virginia thing,
yeah,
first of all. But no, seriously, we are here. We are creating jobs. We are attracting even more jobs. We're making sure that we have the power needs necessary because, you know, we're importing in Virginia 40% of our power. So, and that's a good thing because it shows that we're excelling because we're attracting applied manufacturing. We're attracting businesses that need that power. So we need an all-of-the-above strategy to energy as well. My opponent is all only for renewables. It doesn't rain. I mean, it doesn't blow all the time, and it doesn't shine all the time.
That's true. We know this, too. We know that she has raised $6.7 million, an impressive number. Emerson has a poll out, has her up five for you right now, on you right now. How do you close that gap? How do you close the gap with the money, too?
Oh, yeah, no. So, see, in Virginia, we are not able to raise any money when we are in session. So I've been in session for just about 3 months. So she could raise money that whole entire time.
Gotcha.
So she raised $6 million in 3 months. And in the 1 month that I had to raise before the end of the reporting period, I raised three. So I'm gaining on her. And by the way, those polls are not what our internal polls are showing.
Lieutenant Governor, there's another storyline that's being pushed forward, and that is that Joe Biden was really not in charge over the last 4 years.
Well, everybody knew that.
But the congresswoman, who's a former CIA agent, was very close to him. And this is very close to Washington. Do you think that she had an obligation to say what she saw up close?
Well, for the sake of the country, I mean, you're talking about the leader of the free world. And she kept bragging that she was in constant touch with Joe Biden, talked to him all the time. That means she knew that he was not all there. And that's a national security issue for me because China knew it, Russia knew it, all of the other rogue nations knew it, and she said nothing. So she cannot be trusted with our safety and security. As a Marine, I know a little something about that, Brian.
Right. You have a great bio story, a great American story. You're going to be campaigning. You're going to be with the governor today, who's going to be here shortly, too. And then you're going to go out together for the day.
That's right. That's right.
So you're optimistic that November is going to produce a victory?
It is. Right. We're looking at inauguration in January.
Right. And you said if President Trump wants to help, he's welcome, right?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
I tell you what, she is fired up almost to the point, Ainsley, where I think that she could host a morning show because she is really, she's got the DNA.
I'll tell you what, she's not going to be outworked, I'll tell you. She's going to be, might be out-earned. There's going to be a lot of momentum behind Spanberger. Virginia wants to be a bellwether for the midterm elections. New Jersey's the only other place who has an election for governor today as well. So keep in mind, September 27th, I'm going to be back in Richmond, Virginia at the Carpenter Theater. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for history, liberty, and laughs. And don't forget Dayton, Ohio in between. I'll be there on June 21st. BrianKilmeade.com.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.